He wasn't there too long before he came to me and wanted to know if I wanted to go with him to Indonesia. He was had a trip planned over there by himself. He wanted to know if I wanted to go along. This had been 1989. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, I'd like to go. So just he and I went to Indonesia for 3 weeks. We went to Indonesia. We had a stop in Singapore and in Japan. And he knew people at each one of those places. And I remember that to this day. I mean, it was an awesome, awesome time. I just really thoroughly enjoyed it.
What made it so good? Seeing what other people were doing?
Just being exposed to international culture. Mm-hmm. And everything. And Sam is such a people person that everywhere he went, he had all these friends. And, yeah. You know, I was a celebrity because I was with Sam.
Reflected glory. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was preaching to big crowds. I mean, there'd be 400 or 500 people. Mm-hmm. In the church services. And remember one night they had a baptism where they had a huge baptistry, and they were just, people were lined up. Mm. I think there was something like 300 people baptized that night.
That would be inspiring.
Oh, it was. It was tremendous. And I saw, I'm not sure how this fits into my theology, but I saw people in line. I think there was about three of them. That when they got ready to go into the baptistry, that they fell out on the floor and were just exactly what you would think of a demon-possessed person.
Really?
Yeah. And it didn't faze them at all, the workers. They just got a hold of them and took them down in there and dumped them down in. And when they came up, they were just as normal as you and I. They walked out right out, walked right up the thing, and walked right on out.
Really? That would make an impression.
Yeah, yeah. It was an amazing, amazing experience. And so anyway, but it was on that trip. The reason I brought that trip up is because on that trip, he said, look, he said, I've got James Allen, another guy, he's my assistant pastor, but he said, when we get back home, I'd like to bring you on as assistant pastor, and it'd be the three of us. And I thought to myself, I said, you know, this sounds pretty good. I said, you know, Sam will be the lead pastor, we got James Allen and myself. And I said, didn't take me long to say, yeah, I'll do that. Well, when we got back, he did. He brought me on as assistant pastor, and it was less than a month after that he came to me. He said, I need to talk to you. I said, what's that? He says, I've been offered a job at I don't know if he told me where, but it was New Life. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm going to be stepping down. I said, okay.
So he already had the job at New Life when he left?
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. And he didn't know, I'm sure he didn't know that when he told me that. I mean, when he asked me, right, if I would come. Mm-hmm. On, he didn't know that. But he was running into a little bit of opposition there at Lansdowne, and he told me, he said, I just don't think I'm going to be a good fit here. Mm-hmm. And so I thought to myself, I says, well, I guess that leaves James Allen and myself then. Mm-hmm. Well, about a week or two later, James comes to me and says, hey, I need to tell you something. He says, I feel like the Lord's telling me to go back to school, and I'm going to Regent, and I'm going to be stepping down. I thought to myself, now this is getting a little serious here. So anyway, of course, you know, the elders, we had three great elders, Dave Zook, and these other two gentlemen, Jim Sutherland, he was high up in the Navy, but a wonderful, mm-hmm. wonderful Christian man. He has a real heart for missions and so on. And Stan Jeter, and he was head of Christian World News on CBN. Mm. He was the one that started that years mm-hmm. ago. So we had three really strong men. And so anyway, it was shortly after that they came to me and said, hey, would you be interested in coming on as a pastor here at Lansdowne? I'll do what I can. And so I was installed as pastor there. And this was part of Sam's problems. Sam told me, he says, I've got somebody guarding every ministry in the church. The Sunday schools have got somebody that I can't make any suggestions to. The worship team is the same way. Every place, the way Sam stated it, there's a guardian at every door. mm-hmm. And he says, I'm not going to do this. So anyway, and when I came on board, that's exactly what I found. We worked with it for a while, and finally I began putting my foot down. And I said, this is not going to work. I said, you all are going to have to work together. We're not going to have this thing of all these little groups here and there. There was cliques within the church. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, Linda was a perfect helper for me in that regards, because she wasn't going to let anyone, you know, you don't like me, that's tough, you know, I'll give you a hug anyway. And we began breaking down walls there in there. Mm-hmm. And we had the Sunday school particularly. The lady that was running the Sunday school, the children's Sunday school, just, I mean, you couldn't get through that. There was no talking to her.
In other words, she was going to run it her way, and
she was going to run it her way, or whatever. And I finally decided. I said, "Look," I pulled her into the office one day. I said, "I'm sorry." I said, "You're going to have to make a decision. Either you're going to have to step down, or we're going to have to. You're going to have to open up, or you're going to have to step down." Well, she stepped down. And then along with her went a friend of hers that also left the church. But it began to break down a lot of walls. Mm-hmm. And we were only there, I was pastor there for 7 years.
Mm, I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah, it was a little while, 6 to 7 years. I started in the spring of 2001.
Were you there when they left the Richardson Conference, or did that come afterwards?
No, I was there.
What happened with that? What was the...
Well, the elders, the four of us, the three elders and myself, we felt like we were kind of, being in a military area, half the congregation's military people, knowing the stance of Virginia Conference, we felt like we were being a little bit two-faced. We were trying to minister to these people, and the conference was always sending us information on peace and reconciliation mm-hmm. and all of that. And so we began looking around and thinking about who we might affiliate with. And we thought about New Life and a couple of other organizations, but nothing seemed to quite fit. And then, but we did, we decided that we would just, we would withdraw. We talked to others. I mean, we weren't trying to hide anything, mm-hmm. Phil and Robert and others. And we felt like we needed to withdraw from the Virginia Conference just because of what we were trying to do and knowing the beliefs of the conference and all of that.
In an earlier era, you wouldn't have had to withdraw, they kicked you out.
Yeah, right. So we did that, we went through that. That wasn't a real pleasant thing to do, but Virginia Conference accepted it on one condition. They said, we will accept your resignation if you will come under the umbrella of another organization. In other words, we don't want you being, I mean, I don't know what they'd have done if that's what we'd have done. But that was the counsel we got from them. Mm-hmm. That you will have our blessing if you will come under the umbrella of another. Okay. So it was long about that time then that we had connections with Cornerstone. And so we talked to Gerald Martin about the possibility of coming in and being our covering. Mm-hmm. And so that's, and that was about the time I was getting a little, again, I talk about Sam running from one thing to another, and that's kind of what I do.
Know, 7 years is a pretty long time. I said it was in, left Virginia Conference and went to Cornerstone.
Cornerstone, and that was about the time that I was thinking about doing something else. I tell you, being a lead pastor in a church is draining on you. Well, just to give you a little bit of an idea, about 2 years into my time, our worship leader, Gary Hanby, a great guy, very talented. In fact, he was offered to be on the go with the Gaithers.
Oh, really?
At one point, yeah. Very. But he had depression. Severe depression. And there's a lot of things contributed to that. He was in an automobile accident soon after he was married. Well, they had two children. And in the accident, his wife and his daughter were killed. Mm. So that gives you a little bit of a background of why he might have some depression and so on. So anyway, so he was going through depression, and I got involved with that. And I, for almost a year, I was talking to him, not every day, but 4 days out of a week. And I was trying to do everything I could to help him, and his wife wasn't making it any easier. She was going out, don't know what all she was doing, but he did not have a good marriage situation. Mm-hmm. But he was a worship team, a worship leader in the church. And I finally at one point, I said, there's a Menrith Meyer Clinic up in Fairfax, Virginia, a counseling place up mm-hmm. there. I said, will you go up there if I take you up there? So he agreed. I had to come up with some money, but his wife actually paid me back later on for that. But anyway, I took him up there and left him up there. But he was continually talking about taking his life, mm-hmm. killing himself. Well, to make a long story short, he did. It was one morning, one day that he didn't show up for work, and I thought to myself, about 3 or 4 days went by, and he found his car in Virginia Beach somewhere.
So was he working for you?
No, he was okay. Still in the church. Okay. He didn't show up for work. He was working at Regent. He was a graduate of Regent.
Okay.
He was working at Regent, so they were the ones that contacted me and said, Gary had hasn't showed up for work. Mm-hmm. We don't know where he is. And I told him, I said, I fear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so I had to lead the congregation through that. And one of the things that I did the day that we found, when we found out what had happened, I got the directory out. Linda and I sat down and we called every single person in the church and told them what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because I said, I told every one of them, I don't want anyone coming in here on Sunday morning and doesn't know what had happened to Gary. And we were able to do that. We called every single one. There was a couple of families that we said, look, will you let your family know? But for the most part, we called in. When we came in Sunday, no one, everybody already knew what was going on. And I got up and talked to the congregation. And it was a difficult thing. But Gary was so involved at Regent. So, this story keeps bringing up all kinds of memories. Gary's family, he was from Arkansas,
mm-hmm.
and he was a schoolmate of Huckabee.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so his family, of course, I was in contact with his parents, mm-hmm. and, you know, they had a pretty good idea, too, that this does not sound good, you know. And so I was the one that had to call them and tell them that they had found him. But anyway, they wanted me to come down and do service down there.
Mm.
So Linda and I flew down to Arkansas and had service at a Baptist church down there. And Huckabee came to the service. He was governor at the time. And at the end of the service, after I sat down, they led him out before they dismissed the rest of the congregation, and he came over to me and shook my hand and said thank you for everything that you've done for Gary and everything. So that's kind of my claim to fame.
Pretty good one. Is it, in your opinion, more difficult to lead a younger church than an established church? The reason I ask that, Donnie, we are, had for a while entertained the idea of becoming a minister and had in-home meetings with the idea that he would grow into a church. But he said he found it too crushing, that everybody that came to him came because they had problems. Whereas an established church, you don't attract many new members, but you've already got a stable body there that they've worked the problems out already.
Well,
and he said he just couldn't handle the pressure from all the needy people.
I would say in an established church, you have so many things that are set in concrete. I can give an example: the church that we're going to now,
mm-hmm.
Bayside Baptist. That's a long-established church, and their pastor is relatively young. He's in his mid to upper 40s,
mm-hmm.
and he's always, I'm on a deacon board over there, so I hear
mm-hmm.
and he's always talking about people that are picking at little things that don't make any difference at all, you know, and they get so ingrained in set in their ways, mm-hmm. that this is the way it's been for 50 years, and why are we changing this? And he's got a pretty thick skin because he just, whatever he decides to do, he just does it. And but he's lost some people too because of that. Yeah. You know, so
what did you all leave Lansdowne then? What was?
Oh, when I was at Lansdowne, we had a gentleman came in from, lived here in Virginia Beach, that was doing orphanage work over in Ukraine. And he called and wanted to know if he could come and give a little talk mm-hmm. about it. So he did. And he came and And it was around Christmas, and he asked if we would do an angel tree for kids over in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. So I said, yeah, that'd be fine. So one of the other members of the church came to me and said, look, he says, rather than sending that money over there, why don't you and I just go over there and check it out and see what's going on over there, and you know, we can personally deliver it. I said, well, that sounds great. So we did. And I began meeting people over there, and I decided to go back, and first thing I knew, I got connected with a church over there, got to be real good friends with people over there, and we were going into the orphanage, and so through the ministry of Lansdowne, I got connected with the ministry in Odessa, in Ukraine, mm-hmm. Going into all these orphanages and everything. So I was doing that along with, of course, still pastoring at Lansdowne. Mm-hmm. But as I'd been there for 7 years, and again, I was starting to get, you know, and I just decided, and talking over with Linda and everything, I said, look, I just like to do more missions work. Well, in the meantime, you remember when the tsunami hit down there in Sri Lanka and Indonesia back 2004? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Ray and Debbie Berge, who were attending Lansdowne, mm-hmm. were connected with a group called Mercy Works. They were on the Mercy Ships.
That's right, they were, yeah.
Mercy Ships. Well, Mercy Works is sort of a sister organization that does ministry on land. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they go to all different places wherever there's catastrophes or anything. So Debbie asked Linda and I, said, look, he said, there's a group going from Mercy Works to Sri Lanka. She said, she was a nurse. She says, I'm going with them. Do you all want to come with us? And so we said, yeah, we'll go. So we went down there to Sri Lanka about 2 months after the tsunami. And that was a very impactful trip too, just like the trip to Indonesia. Mm-hmm. And so I got to know the people at Mercy Works. So after we came back from that, I kept in contact, and they went to China. They had some big earthquakes in China in 2008. Mm-hmm. And so I offered to go along on that. And they would take me along as pastoral support. These were primarily medical teams.
Okay.
And so I would go as pastoral support, and went to China. And then Jeremy and I went to Sudan, South Sudan, with them. And see, Jeremy could go as a paramedic,
right.
So he could do all kinds of stuff. And so I was again the pastoral support.
That's a pretty desolate place, isn't it?
Well, at that point, it was calm. North Sudan was really where all the there's been fighting in South right. Sudan since then, but North Sudan was really where all the Muslims were and a lot mm-hmm. of danger and everything. But South Sudan at that time was pretty stable, and but we were again connected with an orphanage there. And when they were expanding, they had one orphanage and they were building another one. And we went out to the place where they were building the new orphanage. Mm-hmm. And we lived in tents for 3 weeks and ate beans and rice three meals a day. That's what we had for every single meal for 3 weeks. And when I kid people, we had two meals, beans and rice and beans.
I bet that McDonald's hamburger looked good when you got that.
It really did. But it was...
So you just wanted to spend more time working
Then you asked me why I kind of... Right. Yeah, and I wanted to spend more time in mission work, overseas mission mm-hmm. work. And then I really got connected in Ukraine. So I was going over there twice a year. Mm-hmm. I was going sometimes. There was one point where I went 5 times in a 12-month period. Mm. So I was going very regularly over there. And the reason I could do that is because I was using credit card to pay lumber bills here in the business.
And frequent flyer miles.
Frequent flyer miles. It cost me $60 to fly over there. Yeah. Airport taxes.
Yeah, that thing you can afford to do.
Yeah, I could afford that. Yeah. And so it just seemed like the Lord kind of opened up the door. And as time went on, we kind of got away a little bit from the orphanages, and I got connected with churches over there. Mm-hmm. And I'm very close to a pastor over there right now. And
he's in Odessa?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're really going through a really tough time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But when the war broke out, I had people coming to me regularly here, knowing that I had connections over there, and mm-hmm. said, "We'd like to send money over there, but we don't know where to send it to." I said, "I can take care of that." I said, I know. Mm. I trust this guy. I know what they're doing. He sends me pictures, photos every day. They were going out, sending trucks out, going over to Romania, bordering mm-hmm. countries, buying food and medicines and bringing them back and mm-hmm. distributing them. And they've been doing that ever since the war has started. And I got connected with the pastor over at Beach Fellowship on General Booth Boulevard, and they have a good bit of money. And between us, the money that I collected and the money that they were sending, we sent something like $50,000
wow.
over there.
That was a help.
Yeah, we were sending a lot of money over there.
Did you ever go to Albania in your trips?
Yeah. I was in Albania.
The Shahinis?
Yeah, I was in. I've been there 3 times, I think. I was actually there for about 4 months back
oh, really?
In 2014, and worked with the school over there with them and helped out in the church and so on. And while I was over there, then I would make trips over to Ukraine. It wasn't very far, 600 miles over there. So I went over there a couple of times. Way back in, let's see, this was in 2014. And they had an uprising. There was a bunch of thugs from Russia came in and started a bunch of problems there in Odessa. Mm-hmm. They were really, I don't know if there were some gunshots shot, but it was mainly throwing bricks and just creating havoc over mm-hmm. there. And that was when I was in Albania. And I said, I'm going over there. I'm going to see what's going on. Deanie said, "You better not go over there right now." I said, "Yeah." I said, I know people over there." I said, "I don't worry." I said, "I won't have any problem." So I got a hotel room. And so this happened like in the middle of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday. And that weekend they put a curfew on the mm-hmm. city. Didn't want anybody out on the streets. So I was staying in a hotel downtown, but I couldn't stay in the hotel, so I went out and was walking. It was really an eerie feeling because there was no one around anywhere in the city. And he told them because they were afraid these thugs were going to come back out. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't too worried because I could see if anybody would approach me. I'd been back in the hotel room, mm-hmm. But it was really interesting because there was a young man that was killed And there was a lady there at the end of the street. There was flowers all around there where this young man was killed. And she was playing a musical instrument and singing and just standing there. And she saw me, and wasn't anybody else around. And I said, I kind of motioned for us. Is it okay if I take your picture? And she said, yeah. So I took her picture, and I've got her picture on my phone right now. But I had a lot of interesting experiences over there.
When are you going to write your book?
What's that?
When are you going to write your book?
I don't know. I can talk about it better than I can write it.
So you're at the Baptist Church now. I assume you stayed at Lansdowne after you resigned the ministry, or did you leave them to go somewhere else?
We were kind of back and forth. Uh-huh. You know, we came to Mount Pleasant for a while, and then we went back to Lansdowne. We actually stayed at Lansdowne for almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of people that had really connected with Linda and I, and we knew it made it uneasy for the pastor that was there when we stepped down.
That is a difficult situation.
Yeah, it is, and you really, really have to be careful. And we knew that they were a little uncomfortable with it, and although they said that we could stay, so we stayed there for a while, but then we came back to Mount Pleasant for a little while, and we kind of back and forth, and then Jeremy actually invited us to come with them to Bayside, because they mm-hmm. live out there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only problem. It's a long ways from here. And so it was nice being in the same church that they were. And
is he a part-time pastor now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he doesn't really have a position. He does preach from time to time there. But he's also involved in what is called Kairos ministry. It's a ministry to inmates in prison.
Okay.
And he's involved with that. And you have to be a pastor to be spiritual director
mm-hmm.
in that ministry. And so he got his degree from Liberty.
Where is, speaking of prison, where is the Chesapeake Jail ministry now? Is the United Church still involved in it?
I don't know. I mean, I know they have a chaplain out there.
It's a line item in the budget, but I don't think anybody goes anymore.
I don't know. I don't know of anyone that's...
Why did Harold resign? Harold Burry.
You know, I don't know. I know that... You know, Sam came on as overseer. Sam Skaggs was overseer.
I didn't know that.
And I know that Sam and Harold, they didn't mesh real good. I don't want to speak for Harold, but I don't know if it was, you know, it was long about that time that they wanted to remodel the store. I don't know if that was an excuse for Harold mm-hmm. or whether he really, I think it was some of both. I think Harold was probably a little, you know, what did he serve? He probably served, 10, 11 years or so.
Yeah.
And I think maybe he was ready for something a little different.
The reason he gives, I've interviewed Harold twice, is that he had kind of set his heart on consolidating the church up at the school to have one campus there for the church and the school.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they were working toward that. And then when it was defeated or voted against, which he says now is probably a good thing, it kind of took the wind out of the sails.
Yeah.
And he said, I just felt like the church wasn't following me. And then at the same time, when Leonard lost the farm, is that his parents were dependent upon that income.
Right.
And so in order to get paid the rent, they'd do something, and that's what he went back in.
When I was, what side of the issue would Harold have, did Harold?
Wanted to move it.
He wanted to move it.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't really know one way or the other.
Yeah,
I know there was friction, yeah. And I know Philip was a big proponent of moving mm-hmm. up there.
And I wasn't at the church at that time, yeah. But I know my brother Eric was involved in that somehow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was the old dyed in the wool. No, we ain't gonna go change our.
Yeah.
I think they voted it down from what little I know about it.
Yeah.
I haven't delved into that part yet. When Harold resigned, was Keith already there?
Keith came on when I left.
Oh, he did, okay. So he came on as Harold's assistant or assistant to Harold, okay. Well then, how did they arrive that Sam would come in? Harold said that Sam and Keith came to the church together, offering Sam as the lead minister and Keith as his assistant.
I don't really know.
Also need to read some of the minutes.
Well, Sam was pastor there for a little while.
Just by himself?
Okay. Well, he and Keith.
Okay.
Sam and Keith.
All right.
A little bit the same thing happened that happened at Lansdowne. Sam wanted to change a lot of things, bring it up to more up to date,
right.
Just like he did over at Lansdowne, experienced a pushback. Well, Sam will put up with that for a little while, but then he'll get discouraged or whatever, and then he'll move on.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty much, I hadn't even really thought about that, but that's pretty much what happened at both Lansdowne and Mount Pleasant.
That is one of the stories I am planning to tell in offering both sides of it. My perception is one of the problems that Sam had, well, it was twofold. One was his personality. He's an evangelist, not a pastor. Or his gifts are more toward evangelism than the pastor.
Right.
But the other thing was, he was at New Life for 7 years, and one of Maggie's friends, because Maggie still goes to the bridge, got married here a year or so ago. And so we went to the wedding reception, and they put us with the old people table, who just happened to be the deacons and the minister's wife from the bridge. So I took the opportunity to ask, you know, how are you structured? What is your membership? Just to find out, how do you work?
Yeah.
And discovered that it's unlike any church. I guess there are churches like that. My experience is limited. But it was basically, he said, no, we don't have members. We do not have a membership role. You come, you join. This is where, how about decisions? We have the deacon board, or whatever they call it, a leadership committee, I think. And the preacher, they make the decisions. And when the deacon leaves, the deacon board replaces it, or whatever they call the guy. And the same thing with the preacher. It's all done within this group of eight or less people. The rest of them have no say whatsoever, period. Done. Out of it. It's really unique, and it explains to me a little bit of Sam's. If Sam lived in that environment, and from other people I've talked to, Gerald apparently was somewhat that way in Cornerstone, that he ran things and was jealous of usurpers who might come along and want to do something different.
Yeah.
Where, and then he hit Mount Pleasant, and here you've got people who have roots going back five generations.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not easily swayed in their opinions.
Yeah.
And so it was, in fact, he had enough insight, because I think Sam does like a little empathy sometimes. But he said when he talked about coming there, that Beverly told him, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. I know those people, I know you, it will not work, do not do it. And I said, you were adamant, don't do it. He said, I did it anyway. And he said, in the middle of some of the troubles along the way, he said, I went in bed one night, and said, I was telling Bev about it, and she sat up and said, I told you, I told you.
Bev, she's a great lady, but I know she's been through it. She's caught in the middle of Sam and all these congregations.
And he does know. Sam knows people all over the place. He gets things
done
that
Yeah.
You know, even the story of the Shaheenis and hearing his message and so forth. You know, one thing that really amazes me about that is the fact that, you know, we were over there for a week last year. Dina said, you know, when they asked him, you know, he said, the question wasn't, do you want to give your heart to Christ? It was, do you want to change your life? And he said, I've just been laid off because my job disappeared and all the turmoil of getting rid of the communists. And said, I got a wife and kids. Yeah, I want to change my life.
Yeah.
He said, that's all I volunteered for. He said, but after the thing, they got them all together. He raised their hand. They gave Bibles and told them to have meetings. He said, they gave me this book. I thought it was a novel. I'd never heard of the Bible. I had no idea what it was.
Wow.
And he said, so they started holding home meetings to study the Bible. So they'd get together and they'd just start page one. And among themselves, try to figure out what it meant. Because he said the visitors from outside the country came to once every 3 months or once a month, or, you know, they were on their own period. And all they had was the Bible. And they came so close. I mean, well, they are evangelical Christian faith and belief, with nothing but the Bible.
Yeah.
I just found that incredible. That they didn't develop some kind of weird off-the-wall stuff. But other than non-resistance, they're perfect Mennonites.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an amazing story. Yeah.
Just incredible. Yeah. So, anyhow, where was I now? All right, at the end of Sam's term, I know the climax was really because the church voted 50-50. And then the overseer, I forget his name, upon advice from a higher up, determined to hold the meeting that kind of blew everything up. But Sam said he had already decided that he was not going to renew his contract. You know, he said it would be impossible to lead a church that divided about whether he should stay or not. And in fact, he said they wanted him to be at the meeting. He said, but he had already planned something else and he knew he was going to resign anyway, so he didn't bother. He said, there was no point in it. It was probably a good thing he wasn't there. But had Keith left before Sam resigned or afterward? Do you know?
Keith left?
Yeah, or resigned.
I think it was along about the same time.
It was, but I can't remember if it was before Sam resigned or after Sam.
I think it was a little after.
Okay. I'm glad he's coming back. It was amazing to me how many people left the church.
Yeah.
Surprised. Didn't expect that at all. So what are your hopes and dreams for the next 20 years?
Stay alive. I'd be going over to Ukraine on a regular basis if it wasn't for this war going on. And there's no way, and it's not as much the war as it is no way of getting in there. The only way I could get to Odessa would be to go to Warsaw and take a train down to Odessa, but it's about 600 miles. It's about a 15-hour, 18-hour train ride. The thought of doing that and then getting ready to come back home and have to go 18 hours back up to Warsaw, and it's just too much.
Especially if you can do good right from where you are.
Well, yeah.
What do you think is going to happen there? What do you think the ultimate outcome
is? I don't know. I had no idea this thing would last that long. Had no idea. I did go to, after the war broke out, I went to Warsaw. They were bringing all those refugees into Warsaw. And this Mercy Works that we told you about earlier, that I went to China and these different places with, they were sending teams over to Warsaw, where they were housing these refugees.
Mm-hmm.
So I volunteered to go over there. It had been June after the war broke out. And I was really glad. That was as near as I could get to getting into Ukraine, but they had all these refugees. We were there for about a week helping. And I was very impressed with the Polish people.
Really?
They really treated those people with dignity, with respect. They had a huge, like a conference center. and they had that thing, they had that thing all divided off with partitions of about 12 foot square, and the various families, or most of it was lay women and children, some few men there, but most of them were women and children, and everybody had a space, and it was very clean. There was, you know, a lot of times like that, you get a lot of odors and things like that, but they had a huge laundromat area where people could wash their clothes. Everybody was just like you and I, and they were well protected. Women with little babies had a special room to themselves. You could only get in there if you had the right credentials. And they had police outside, you know, directing traffic, making sure the right people got in, and the ones that weren't supposed to be there didn't. They had about 2,000 people there. And we helped serve meals and interacted with the people. It was very interesting to me because I knew enough Russian that I could at least get a conversation kind of started, you know.
Can you speak both Russian and Ukraine?
No. The words I know are Russian, but Odessa is a Russian-speaking area.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have very little interaction with Ukrainian. People tell me that they can understand each other, Russian and Ukrainian, but they're two different languages, obviously. But I would go in there and I would ask them where they were from. And, you know, it would really strike, you know, you remember Mariupol was a big thing on the news when the war first broke out. And, you know, go down and sit, you know, somebody tell you, I'm from Mariupol, or I'm from one of these other cities, I'm from Kiev, or whatever, you know. And then I found out that all I had to do was ask them, do you have family back? For the next 20 minutes, they'd be telling you about their family. They pull out a drawer with a picture album, and one of these are my grandkids. And it was very meaningful and yet very sad too, what these people were having to go through.
What's going to happen in Israel?
Well, I tell you, I'm really upset that the United States seems to be backing away from any support.
That's a mistake.
I don't know. I think Netanyahu is pretty much giving the finger to the world and says, we're going to do what we need to do. this is our war and not yours.
And if they want to survive long term, I think they have to.
They know that.
You know, there is just seeing this and experiencing it. It gives some credence to the Lord's command when they first came into the land to destroy everything and everybody in it.
Yeah.
And it saves the future conflict.
Yeah, as I cruel hadn't thought about that because the Lord really got aggravated when they would just leave a little something.
Come back and bite you.
Yeah.
I told you.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't even really thought about that. But
interesting country we live in, or time we live in. Of course, I guess all times have been interesting.
Yeah.
I know I spent a lot of time studying early Mennonite and early Christian history. Learned a lot of stuff I didn't know. There are no times that haven't been interesting.
No. You know what? You know, I have to, people, you know, if people are sort of down right now, oh, what's going to happen to the world? What's going to happen? I said, go back to the Civil War. What do you think that was like?
Yeah.
Go back to that plague in 1918.
Mm-hmm.
When they lost a whole lot larger percentage of people than we did in COVID, then it was World War I, II.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you got it all.
And it won't stop.
It won't stop.
It'll keep on going.
Yep.
still, it's interesting. Yeah. To me, I mean, I just find other people's stories fascinating. Just like you being there in Ukraine and hearing those stories.
Yeah. Is so much of it, you know, it's one thing to read it in a newspaper, but it's something else to see it in person. Mm-hmm. I know when I was there in 2014, that's when I was telling you about that little uprising and everything, that mm-hmm. these Russian guys, thugs came in there and creating all kinds of problems. I don't know if you remember, but there was a bunch of them got they were holed up in a huge office building, about mm-hmm. a five-story mm-hmm. office building. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the thing caught fire and killed a whole bunch of them. Mm-hmm. And they had boarded. These guys, these thugs, had gone in there and boarded up the doors mm-hmm. so that people from the outside couldn't get into them. And the thing caught on fire. Mm-hmm. And so they were stuck inside. And you know, the Ukrainian people were trying to free those doors to get them out of there. Hmm. But and they got some out, but there was a bunch of them that were killed. But anyway, the reason I bring it up is I was over there a year later, or it wasn't that long, it was 3 months later or so, and I was riding in a taxi, and I asked the taxi. Well, I had my interpreter with me, and I asked her, I said, where was that building that where those people were killed? And she said, well, we're going pretty close to it. So she told the taxi driver, and he said, do you want to go there? I said, well, yeah. I said, I'd like to see it. It's a newsworthy thing. So we went, and he was evidently well known there. But the taxi driver took me right in the building, and we went right in upstairs. And they still had all the, they hadn't, obviously all the bodies and stuff were removed, but there was shoes, there was ropes tied to the window where they were trying to let themselves mm-hmm. down, melted tennis shoes, doors that were broke where they were trying to break their way out.
No repairs or anything?
Nothing. They hadn't, other than taking the bodies out, they hadn't done a thing to it, just like it was when it happened.
Have you visited any of the Mennonite territory in Ukraine?
No, I haven't. I probably would have been through them. It was a few years back, the pastor over there took me, we went all over Ukraine. Mm. He wanted me to meet and to speak in the different churches that right. he was aware of. So he took me to a conference where I spoke at a conference and went to Kiev, to Arab church there, Christian church, and several other cities that he took me around. Mm-hmm. We put, I think I figured 1,100 miles on in about 4 days.
He did some riding there.
So, yeah.
Saw some country.
So I did. I saw a lot of the country there. Yeah, I've got pictures that conference that I was at. That was amazing. Those people. It was probably I would say probably 300 people there, and the Ukrainian people are not very expressive for the most part. Mm-hmm. They're pretty subdued and everything. But I mean, these people were really into it and worship. Praise and, mm-hmm. and the music was just awesome, and it gives me goosebumps when I go in those places mm-hmm. and they break out in a song in a foreign language in Russian. That's a song just like we sing right here. How great yeah. thou art, and they break out in Russian. How great thou art, you know. It just a lot of the contemporary songs that we sing also. Mm-hmm. Very well known.
Yeah, when we were in Albania, they took us, she was invited to speak. It was an anniversary of a church south of Lazia. You know, and they had people who had helped set the church up. So there were Germans, there were some Dutch folks there. There were people from all over Europe. And we got there early, so we got to meet a lot of the people. There was one from England. They were involved in the church. And you were, boy, you know, when they started, you had to cry. I mean, there's yeah. no
yeah.
way around it. To all these people from all these places.
Yeah.
Singing, oh, I think the thing go how great they are is what yeah. they sing. Didn't know the words, but I knew the music.
Yeah, yeah. It's just something that just brings you together. Yeah. You know, it's just.
Well, I appreciate your time, Merle.
Yeah, Yeah.
You give me one more project, I'm behind on.
you brought back a lot of memories for me here that I've kind of put on the back burner of my mind or something.
Yeah, it's funny how things will come out of the woodwork when you start thinking about them.
Yeah.